Good morning, Charlotte Harbor.
Not quite. It's a good attempt, but
you didn't have the helicopter sound effect.
Yeah, we're going out with that. Hey, I was trained for something a little different.
That was good, though.
That's right. Afternoon. I really did. No, it's not. This could be 6 a.m. It could be 3 in the morning. You don't know when somebody's listening.
Well, that's true.
Good point. See, you just take things too literally. Goodness gracious. I don't know what's going on.
I'm losing
everything. Well, we're back. Fish and Frank in the chair here. We got the band back together again. Got Robert in the chair across from me and Captain Kale in the other chair. Hi, guys.
Hi, Frank.
Hi.
So, how is everybody today?
Just ducky.
Me too.
I'm damp.
We don't need to know this TMI.
No, that's
too much information.
Damp just means the hose got away from him.
Oh. Yeah,
moist is TMI.
Yeah, a little bit of all that's TMI. I'm sorry, Robert.
It looked like a cobra back there just running all over the place, hammering me. Barb had to turn the hose off to save me. I couldn't catch it.
Couldn't catch
it. Oh, yeah, it was entertaining.
Climb the mountains of Costa Rica. Rica for the most venomous snakes in the world, but a loose garden hose kicks him.
Yeah. How does that work, Robert? How do you, like do venomous snakes and all this stuff and then get your butt kicked by a garden hose?
I don't know. I'm not as leery of the garden hose, I guess, but yeah, still blind enough to not catch it.
You got complacent.
I think next time he goes to Costa Rica, I'm taking out a separate life insurance policy on him.
I want in on that.
Nice. One of those ghost insurance policies. There you go. Perfect.
No.
Odds are in your favor.
Don't think anything of it, Robert.
If you get a letter from Lloyd's of London, just throw it away.
Yeah, just throw it away. Nothing to do. Okay, this is a fishing show. Fishing. Going fish, fishing. And Terry and I actually went fishing.
One time.
Went Friday.
Yeah.
It was
much
nice.
Deserved.
Well, right at the end of December, I did some work on my boat, got everything done, put it in, test drove it, and the cold spell hit, and it sat at the top of the ramp. And the other day, Friday, we sat there, and Mike and Claudine got us one of these weather things, with the anemometer and the wind stuff and all that.
Okay.
And it's also...
So now you can decide not to go fishing right from the kitchen counter.
Yeah, we looked out at the kitchen, went out the kitchen counter, looked at it, went, 48, nope, we ain't going yet. Okay, 56. No, we ain't going yet. Okay, 68. Okay, now we can. I'll go get some shrimp and stuff. By the time I get back, it'll be 70 degrees. Actually, it was really about 1:30 before we left. Went over to Micah Cutoff. I didn't do anything. Tried 3 or 4 different rigs. Went out, trolled past marker 2. Tangled all my lines. I don't know if it was that new swimming mullet from... egret that tangled my other line, or if when Terry was driving the boat she took an S turn too quick, but got the lines all tangled up, didn't get a hit, went back up river where I know it a little better. And what was weird, started out and tried bottom bouncing along for some fish and didn't really hit anything, and then took the put a split shot on and pitched it right up underneath the mangroves, and I mean, I was on my game. I was skipping up, and I was, 2-3 feet underneath the mangroves. Nothing. Finally, took the weights off, hers and mine, and we both cast it up into the current, and we're just letting it drift down right at the edge, right on the drip line of the trees, you know what I mean? Right on the edge. And went up, and all of a sudden, boom, she gets hit. Boom, I get hit. I had about a 14-inch sheephead. She had about a 17-inch redfish. And it was instantaneous. Boom, boom.
They've been hanging out on the edge of the trees. I think they're sitting in the sun getting warm.
Yeah, it was just crazy. But that's how we, if we cast in the, down on the deep and let them drift, nothing. Pitching underneath the mangroves, nothing. Right on the drip edge and letting it drift across. They had to come in slow with the drift. And if you just cast where the fish were hitting, nothing.
They were... doing the exact same thing in the Mayak cutoff on Friday.
Yeah, you had to throw it up into the current and let it drift by them, and boom, boom, boom. And tail hooking was no good. Head hooking was no good.
No, you had to hook them in the middle.
Yeah, I threaded the hook from the tail up into the meat so that the hook was more in the middle of the shrimp, and tap, 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 set the hook a little bit, got the fish. So I was definitely into J-hooks at that point because I can't thread a freaking circle hook. I mean, what kind of mental midget goes, it's an inline circle hook, thread it on. Yeah, it's a circle. You, yeah, I hate circle hooks.
So do I.
There's a few phrases that start with circle, and then they go on to be more rude. And that's, to me, all what you have with circle hooks. So, anyway, so our fishing adventure ended up 6'8 redfish, 6'8 sheephead. Nice day at the end. We went up a couple of cuts in between, further upriver, and it was all about getting between two islands where the water was going through.
Yeah. Did you try our little hole out in front of your house?
No.
Mm-mm. You should have.
Well, I went by it casting, and we didn't hit anything, so...
No, you gotta get up in there, sit for a couple minutes, let it calm back down after bringing the boat in there.
Yeah, I just drifted through. I had the wind at the right thing, turned it off out in the river, and drifted through there pitching, and nothing.
Oh, yeah, we're on an incoming tide.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that doesn't work there.
Yeah, and so...
They gotta have an outgoing tide in that spot.
Ended up, there's that one deep cut that wasn't very good, but I went up to the other one. It's to the left. It's not on the same outlet.
Right.
But that's where we found the redfish. Anyway, so let's try a little bit of a fishing report. Peace River, small redfish, and sheephead. I didn't see anything else upriver. So you heard anything else upriver?
I've been up there a few times. Small reds. Was catching some really, really nice trout around the islands just above the 75 bridge. Mm-hmm. If you know where the oyster beds are just off the islands, it seems like they've been hanging on those oyster beds.
Okay.
So they haven't been up there in a week or two, but 3 weeks ago they were doing great on big trout. Yeah. And most of them were over slot.
Wow. Well, I didn't hit any trout, but I wasn't fishing any open water either, though.
Yeah.
So... anything going on at 41?
Been some trout over there that I've been hearing about. And then you said you've been hearing about some good sheephead over there.
Yeah, there's been some I-75 and 41 both have some nice sheephead. But we're going to have to do part of the DOT's work and scrape some pilings. You're going to have to get there and scrape some of the pilings, get all that gunky oyster shell gooey stuff into the water.
Barnacle glue.
Yeah.
Barnacle glue.
I mean, it's kind of like Gorilla Glue, only harder.
Yeah. So, you know, work some of those barnacles off. Don't do a lot at once because, I mean, you actually want to fish for a while. And if you scrape it all off in the first bit, you're done.
Yeah, so, you'll feed the fish and then they're done.
Yeah. Usually you're so quiet and boy, you're attacking today.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I'll tone it down.
No, I toned you down. I got a toner downer here over here. But I was like, wow. Usually Robert's over there in the back. He's cool, man. He don't want to say like that. But today you're all excited.
I'm running around with the shrimp. I'm all basket cased out.
Yeah.
Plus I'm actually on my second Mountain Dew of the day, which is unnormal for now.
That's what it is, that so second I'm Mountain Dew, because
I juked out.
Haven't come off the sugar rush yet.
Oh, no. Yeah. I've been trying to only drink one, and I'm juked out now.
So, anyway, if you chum for them, you can get some nice sheephead there. There's a few out of men black drum, but nothing I would actually fish for. You might luck into one. Some trout, a little bit of whiting and stuff around there. Lashley Pier has been pretty decent on trout right now.
Yeah. And been hearing some mixed reports. Most of the guys are catching them on the bottom.
That's the weird part.
Yeah.
That's strange. Trout,
the only thing
big
I
bottom
can figure
feeders.
Is just because of that amount of fresh water pouring out of there, maybe.
Could be hanging in the salt down on the bottom. Yeah. You know, people always say, well, you know, where would the salt be? It's very simple, boys and girls. Take a glass with water in it and take a teaspoon of table salt. Pour it into the glass of water. Does it float or does it sink?
It sinks.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, sometimes direct observation science is the easiest way to figure it out. One cool thing about salt and water, it doesn't matter if you put it in hot water or cold water, it dissolves at the same rate. Yeah. Like sugar dissolves instantly in hot water, but it takes a long time in cold water. Salt doesn't matter if the water is hot or cold, it dissolves at the same rate.
Yep.
Yeah. So
it's pretty bizarre.
But it is heavier than water. So those trout, as Robert said, might be down by the bottom. Seeing the same phenomenon over at Bay Shore and several of the other piers where you're literally bottom fishing for the trout.
Yeah.
Weird.
Nice. Everything's been on the bottom, inside the Mayaca cutoff.
Seems like the guys that are throwing jig heads or just a small...
Now, don't go all quiet on me now.
Not a giant egg sinker, okay, but a small egg sinker or a decent-sized split shot, just enough to get it right close to the bottom.
So, Port Charlotte Canals, a lot of sand brim right now, which is really cool. We never really get to talk about sand brim. Crappie jig... Take a shrimp tail. I usually just use a frozen shrimp, and I take the tail, slice it with a knife into about quarter-inch pieces, and just put it on the hook of the crappie jig. And the exact same thing you use for crappie, the little curl tails and marabou hair, and believe it or not, best bet I usually find is under a small bobber. But if you like casting, retrieving with the lures, just fish them the same way you would crappie. Same retrieve, same everything. And around the seawalls, around the docks, a lot of sand brim there. Excellent eating fish. Kind of like a saltwater crappie, the sand brim is.
Yeah.
A lot of trout around the canals, too. Canal mouths.
Heard the sunrise.
Sunrise has been doing good. Robert's Canal, I can never remember the name of the canal.
Elkham.
Elkham has been doing well.
I have a question for you that you might be able to answer.
Yes.
All right.
You may speak to the wise one on top of the sandbar.
Nice.
I'm here.
On top of the sandbar.
On top of the sandbar, waiting to...
That's good.
Door
the other
advice.
Oracle.
Yes.
My canal. I have a very hard time catching trout during the day back there. I mean, almost never. But yet at night, I catch them pretty regularly this time of year around the bridge lights. And I don't understand...
No one understands what happens to you, Robert.
Yeah, well, that's a given.
There is no explanation for the land of Robert. Trout are notoriously poor feeders at night.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, it's you. It has nothing to do with the fish. For the rest of us, it's pretty normal. For you, who knows why it happens?
Great.
I'm sorry, buddy, but...
I'm with Frank on this because I've never caught a trout that far up in your canal.
Well, I catch trout up there, but I usually trout every once in a while. You get them at night; they do okay, but they feed way better during the day.
Right? Yeah. I mean, that hole up there by Higgs. I mean, I know that they catch them up there pretty regularly and stuff. It's just the biggest trout I have ever seen caught from shore on a consistent basis have always been at Eljo Bean at night. I mean, like 25, 27, 28 inch fish. You know, never great numbers by any stretch, but just the biggest trout I've ever seen caught from shore have been at night.
Well, let's
not trout. The trout behind my house are still small, but I'm not hooking squat during the day, but every night or every morning before work, I'm hooking 1 to 3 fish. You know, they're small guys.
I really wish I could answer that. I have no idea.
I think it's water temperature.
It's pretty cold.
It's just odd.
It's just cold.
I can't figure
I would
it out.
Say that you were right, but I'm going to call it on that one, Kale, because it's too cold. I mean, if it was warm, you know, hot during the day and cold at night, I could say that the water temp would be an effect on that. But to be quite honest, there's not a lot of difference between the water temp in the day and in the night there. It's still in the low 50s and 60s. It's still cool to cold no matter how you look at it, what time of day you're at.
It's what I've been seeing is seems to be better fishing towards the afternoon.
But he's talking about night, dark, mornings and night. So I'm going to call not on the temperature, but there's something else going on. And
it's when all the Jewfish under his bridge go to sleep.
That could be it.
Probably the most logical.
Now, out of everything we've talked about, that could have the most to do with it. They actually feel more comfortable coming up there in the dark because they don't see the bigger predators.
Right. It's just one of those odd things I've never thought to ask you about, but literally for probably the last 10 years, it's been that way.
Yeah, I have no idea. Not a clue, but I will investigate.
Just figured I'd pick your brain.
Your wife's ready to join Barnum and Bailey here.
She didn't
soon.
Skip.
I know.
Yeah, but
no pirouette out the door.
Yes. So Barb is just. We have this massive order came in, and it's like 4 major pallets, and she's trying to get it all out. Well, we do our work.
Yeah.
She's taking care of the light work.
Good gosh.
No, so, she doesn't make it here. She can always get a waitress job. She's used to carrying armfuls of stuff around this place without dropping it.
Yeah, that's quite talented. So anyway, Moving around the corner, Grassy Point's doing good. Trout, Alligator Bay's doing good on trout. There's some redfish here and there through Alligator Bay, right around Port Charlotte Beach and all that.
Whiting, too.
Yeah.
Been some whiting in there.
Really?
Good size whiting.
Wow.
Good size whiting.
I hadn't heard about the whiting.
Catching 14 to 16 inch whiting.
Boy, that's good eating that size.
That's big.
That's nice eating whiting.
Yeah, they
whiting.
Were big, and that's they were giant. All consistently that size.
That's pretty impressive size whiting.
Pieces of shrimp? Live shrimp?
Live shrimp.
Really?
Yeah. Bouncing them on the bottom.
Very cool. Jig head?
Nope.
Sinker?
Sinker.
All right. So there's one for you, boys and girls. I hadn't heard of that one. And whiting, I know everybody uses them for bait, but they are at heart a very, very good eating fish.
Well, I think they're better than redfish.
Yeah, I would rather use them for food than bait anytime.
Definitely.
I use small ones for bait, but if it's big enough to fillet, it usually goes in the cooler.
Yeah, they don't have as much of a red side to them as the redfish. They're a lot more mild than the redfish. Real good eating.
Yeah, very flaky, real good meat on the whiting. Southern kingfish, if you're looking it up, it's only whiting in the local name. The real name, if you look in a book, is southern kingfish. Now, going along the shoreline there, towards the Maca Cutoff, Rocky Creek, scattered mixed reports on Rocky Creek with redfish, trout, but it's kind of mixed. One day hot, one day not.
Yeah, and it's usually not like Rocky Creek. Rocky Creek is usually pretty steady for redfish, trout, and sheephead this time of year. But it's been real touch and go, just like everything else has been out there.
It's hit or miss. You get in there and you're going to have a bad day, pretty fair day, or a pretty good day.
And the water
flow. I don't think great days are going to happen right
the
now.
The water flow has changed in there a little bit.
Really?
And when you go back up in there a ways, you've got that double turn. And that outside turn is right along the beach.
Right.
And it's broke through there.
Well, it always had a cut through. It's opened
it
up even more.
It had a little cut. We got Dave's boat through it.
Ooh, that's big.
Yeah. So
I had no idea it got that big.
That's changed the water flow in there a little bit on the bottom half of it.
Yeah. No,
I'd say a lot if it's opened up that much.
Yeah, because it used to be just a small opening, and I used to fish the front of that all the time.
Yeah.
Because nobody ever fished
nobody
it.
Ever
it
fished
was,
it.
And you literally had to beach your boat and cast over 4 inches of water into the hole in the back.
Yes.
And you'd catch redfish or snook out of there and drag them over the 4 to 6 inches of water that you just couldn't get to.
Right.
But, yeah, that was there used to be one of my little secret hidey spots. But getting into the cutoff itself, I didn't do a thing on the harbor end of the cutoff the other day. It was in there. Incoming tide. It was low and just started coming in. I should have been whacking the fish like crazy. Nada. Nothing. You said on the north end you were just catching every trout in the world.
Yeah. We sat there and pulled so many trout out of a 5-gallon bucket-sized hole that I was convinced we were catching the same 10 trout multiple times, and I was getting ready to start clipping fins to find out if we were catching these things 2 and 3 and 4 times, because we sat there and pulled 50, 60 trout out of there without a problem.
Nice day.
I've been hearing mixed reports from both mainly on the north end but also on the south end for the entrance for trout, but it does seem like the bigger fish have been more on the northern side, and then oddball reports of some redfish and snook up on the inside, but very scattered.
Yeah, I've been doing,
and I think it goes with your same theory earlier, is it's either going to be really bad or just
really good.
I
mean, I've been fishing.
I don't think you're going to see great, but I think trout fishing was good. That's some great trout fishing.
It's been tough to find legal sized fish in there. I've been fishing that second cut up in on the right, and that cut's pretty deep. You know, you start at the mouth.
It's actually real deep in there.
Yeah, you start at the mouth, then you go back up inside and beat your boat on the sandbar and fish the shoreline across from it, and then I move up a little bit. We had probably a 30 redfish day up in there the other day.
16, 18, 20 inches?
Yeah, little guys, tough to find a legal one. Some flounder in there. We went up to the S-turns the other day. We got some really good redfish in there, some trout, some really nice whiting in there, too.
Bait has been consistent at shrimp, from what I hear.
Shrimp, shrimp, shrimp.
Yeah. Now, getting around over to Aljamain, anything going on over there?
Around the pier itself, there's been some good sheep's head. Not numbers, but better quality ones. both from the bridge embankments and pilings.
You can actually move that cord back up if you want underneath that box.
Wasn't really bothering me.
Okay.
And then also there's been some good-sized trout. Once again, not real good numbers, but a little bit better quality. But it seems like it's been a little bit on that hit or miss side, you know. There's several hours of just nothing going on, and then you seem to get like that hour, two, maybe even 3 hour feed where everyone seems to be catching a few fish and then it dies again. Yeah. It's sporadic, and it's not tide related because one guy's coming in saying they did good on the incoming, another guy comes in good on the outgoing.
Now, coming up on the Mayaca River, over on the Hog Island side, there's been some sporadic fish over there, but it's not been great. From what I understand, you either hit them or you don't. When you do hit them, it's not a lot, but it's at least a few.
Yeah. Right.
But coming up into Trout Creek, I'm hearing the snook are starting to go off in Trout Creek a little bit more.
Well, they're starting to warm up. The redfish have been tough in there. The way I've been fishing Trout Creek is free-lining shrimp. Throw it up underneath the mangroves and see if the snook or the redfish pick it up. And then let it drift out from the mangroves just a little bit, and then you're getting into your snapper and your sheephead. And then continue to let it rinse out into the middle. Now, you are getting into catfish and stingray territory, but that's where the trout have been hanging out, is out there in that deeper hole in the middle.
That's where I finally hooked a catfish the other day up in the one creek we were catching sheephead and redfish, sheephead and redfish. I finally let it drift all the way down past and out into the kind of the channel. Hooked our catfish, and we looked at each other and said, okay, we can go now.
And the deep holes inside Trout Creek seems to be the best bets.
Yeah.
And second turn up in there is 7-8 feet deep.
Now, coming down the west side, you guys hearing anything on any of the other creeks?
The west wall has been strangely quiet.
What I've been hearing about is like a lot of smaller redfish. Your one creek with all the blowdowns in it.
Right.
Guy was in there the other day, and he caught about 8 or 10 redfish that were all small, except for one that was 24-incher. But he said on the outside of that, where it kind of...
It's real deep right out on the outside, yeah.
He got into some trout and saw some pompano skip.
Wow.
You know, so sporadic, you know.
I'm hearing about the same reports down by Muddy Bay and Cape Hayes itself.
Yeah.
There's some trout on the inside of the bar, Cape Hayes, more than what's actually out on the bar.
Right, which is a complete opposite usually this time of year.
Well, there's that one real deep hole right on the inside behind the bar in Cape Hayes. There's a deep hole that historically always has a bunch of tiny trout in it. But going out on the bar, usually you can find better fish and more, but there doesn't seem to be a lot out there. It's pretty scattered. Now, coming around into Turtle Bay, the open flat's got a lot of trout. Anything else going on?
Redfish mixed in
and
with
reds,
them.
Yeah.
I mean, getting mixed reports.
Out in the open?
Out in the open, yes. In those deeper grass.
You sure there's not more grass going on here than what you're telling me?
Wrong kind, no.
Okay.
Nope.
All right.
Unfortunately.
That stuff doesn't like to be wet anyways.
Yeah.
But you know, it's just weird. I mean, the guys have been catching redfish and trout mixed in out in that open water. And they're doing a lot of the same thing. They're either drifting a popping cork fairly deep. They're not running it real shallow. And then the other guys are just bouncing stuff along the bottom, catching them on tandem rigs the whole 9 yards.
I heard tandem rigs were doing pretty well down there. But like you say, popping corks, but 3 to 4 feet of line under it minimum.
Deep.
Yeah. You know, you got to keep that shrimp down low.
Yep.
And you might be better off just with a shrimp and a split shot. A
couple of guys were telling me that they've been getting a couple of small snook and some of the small redfish back there and along that deep trough towards the backside where the shack is at.
Right.
On cut pinfish.
Really?
Yeah, they were dicing up small pinfish. They were actually looking for snapper under the shack and got a couple fish that way, and they just kept using the pinfish.
There you go.
So... And I know this time of year when the water gets cold, for some reason, those snook start to eat dead on occasion.
Well, that shack holds a lot of snook.
Yeah. Now, yeah, but they were catching them all in the whole trough there, they said. They caught quite a few fish mixed along that whole trough.
Over in Bull Bay, it's been kind of... Bull Bay's got hit more with the red tide than the other ones.
Yeah.
Because the amount of fresh water it's in has been kind of holding it to a minimal destruction level, but Bull Bay's gotten hit a few times.
Yeah.
And I haven't had a whole lot of good reports out of Bull Bay lately.
No. Neither have I.
No.
You know, it's been, was a couple like at the beginning of last week, but from what I heard, it was either Wednesday or Thursday, a good bloom moved in there it moved right back out, but it was enough to either shut the fish down, move them, or kill a few. I guess a lot of the pinfish were getting wrecked in the turns when they're having a field day beating them up.
Millions of bait fish die when those little red tide events come in, but it's as soon as the tide turns around, the freshwater runoff is just killing the red tide. It's the only saving grace. It caused it, and it's killing it. But kind of the same thing, Gasparilla Sound, the tailing flats behind Boca Grande, that whole area between Boca Grande and the land there on the ICW going up to Placida is just hit or miss on red tide. Placida, when the red tide's not there, it doesn't seem to be going real deep, and there's still a lot of sheephead there, a lot of snappers, stuff like that, that are surviving the red tides because I think they're hanging right on the bottom.
Yeah.
And it's deep enough there where red tide, you know, it's an algae and it kind of suspends in the water, but it does have a little bit of flotation to it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Usually what it takes is a lot of turbid water to get it to go down deep. Every now and then you'll get that occasional really serious blue.
Turbid? I was gonna say, there's
turbid?
The day.
What is turbid? I don't know what is turbid. What is turbid?
Wrong kind.
No, I've had a turbid on my head.
Yes.
But I don't know what you mean when you talk turbid in the water. What the hell are you talking about?
The wind.
The wind? How does wind turbid?
Creates waves and pushes the water down towards the bottom.
Okay, I get
and
that.
And that'll move that red tide down into the water column. Every now and then you'll get a like serious bloom where it'll go real deep into the water column, but those are rarer events. You know, and it's been pretty calm out. I mean, this last week's actually been kind of nice since, you know, it's still chilly.
That's why we went out the other day. It was blowing 5 to 10.
Yeah.
And it was nice. Now, always keep in mind, boys and girls, if you have a smaller boat, at 2 o'clock, the sea breeze is going to pick up every day. If there's sunshine. If there's not sunshine, you're not going to get that sea breeze.
Right.
Because sea breeze is caused by the sun heating up the land. And the ground heats up much faster than the water, causes the air to rise. Once that air gets hot right over the land, it starts to lift up. Well, the cooler air over the water rushes in to take its place. You know, it's like when a thunderstorm happens.
Creating a vacuum.
Yeah, and so it's pulling the air off of the water. So every day about 2 o'clock, you're going to get that extra bit of breeze, that extra 5 miles an hour coming from the Gulf on the land.
Yep.
And it lasts till about 4 o'clock. And then it dies off again. But for 2 hours during the day, between 2 to 4:30, it gets pretty choppy.
Just when everybody's deciding to head home.
Yeah, you know, makes it more interesting ride. You know, if you either want to be back before 2 or after 4, you know, if you're going to leave the flats where you're on. Because it gets pretty bumpy out there. If it's 5 to 10, it'll take it 10 to 15 right then. Yeah. And but then
especially
it goes right.
I've been fishing. It's usually crossing the Myakka straight over to Ponce and that's the roughest place in the harbor on a good west wind.
Yeah, I'm on.
Now, does the water create a shield like that also on the reverse when you have that real strong land-based wind where the harbor will be pretty snotty?
Not if it's turbid.
But the Gulf will be super calm, and not even because it's blocked by the wind. Just literally, it's calm from the beach to 50 miles offshore, but inside there's those two-footers and three-footers.
We used to see it every morning during tarpon season because it's just the opposite. You get a land breeze.
Right.
So does the water out there act
in
as
the
that
morning,
kind of barrier
the land,
a little
the
bit?
Water will go, the air will go from the land out to the water, but in the afternoon it comes back from the beach. But I guess it could. I really don't know, and that's a really good point. I'll have to watch for it a little bit more. I would assume that if you've got a 5 to 10 mile an hour southwest wind, or wind, let's say, out of the east, and then the sea breeze kicks in, it would kind of, you know, null them. I mean, it would stop it a little bit.
I've just been out there a few different times. Mostly it seems to be more of a summer, late fall effect. But
well, that's when you get the strongest sea breeze.
But yeah, but it's the opposite, though. It'd be like
you get a land breeze.
You'll get a land breeze where it's lumpy in the harbor all day long, but in the Gulf, it's nothing.
It's usually not lumpy all day long. About 10, 11 o'clock, once everything starts to warm up and be normal. Because, like I said, we see it every year in the past.
Right.
You know, you got waves crashing over the back of your boat. Your clients get upset.
Opposing wind and tides.
Get nervous and just let it calm down. Just wait about 10 o'clock. This will go away, and it'll be like glass out here. Mm-hmm. And it'll do that.
Yeah. It's you get the – in the mornings, the wind blows from land to the water. In the afternoon, it blows from the water to the land. don't know why this is. Must get scientific evidence for all this stuff. We will find it.
Scientific
we will go
evidence
out and find the science behind it all.
Out.
Yes, we will.
Unless
I know
we can
we
get a grant to do it.
Grant.
There you go.
I'm sure they've now already got all the studies. All I got to do is look it up. But if sounds you go up to Lemon Bay, yeah, look, I mean...
Save the wind.
Yeah, save the wind.
We're going to be rich.
Right now, we're going to save the wind. No throwing jigs into the wind. No throwing... Yes. Lemon Bay. Lemon Bay, boys and girls.
Lemon Bay's had little spotty patches of red tide moving in and out, so it's not... It's
here's
more,
spot. Here's spot.
It's more propaganda with guys talking about it, so it's kind of chasing some of the guys off of there. But what I've been hearing about has been trout and sheep's head right at the ends and the edges of the docks that are along the intercoastal.
Yeah, a lot.
Other than that, I haven't heard anything about redfish, but the trout and sheep's head around those docks.
When you get a nice clear day, no red tide, we've got some sheephead, a little bit of whiting, and a few flounder out along Stump Pass. I don't know if anything else has been going on out there.
Over there by the Tom Adams Bridge, there's been some really good sheep's head and a few whiting and an oddball mangrove snapper and stuff.
All right. And moving on, let's just take a walk down the beaches. Now, the red tide gets worse as you get down by Sanibel.
It's real bad up in Sarasota, too.
Yeah. It's gotten bad up in Sarasota.
Yeah, Sarasota Bay is 8 up from what I understand.
And it all has to do with runoff, currents, flows, eddies. Down around Sanibel, it gets trapped. As the water comes north to south, it kind of washes off the end of Sanibel there, and it forms kind of a swirling bit of swirl water right there in the eddy, and that concentrates a lot of red tide down in that area. Mm-hmm. Sarasota is going to get hit when you get runoff. They get a rainstorm. The runoff hits that bay real bad, and what happens is it feeds that algae and blooms like crazy, but it gets trapped inside of there.
Yeah.
And we had that wind coming out of the south and west didn't let it out. If you have a wind out of the east, anything with east in it blows that stuff out quick, and that's a help. But if it bloomed the last few days when we had winds out with west in them, that was real tough to get it out of there. It just builds it up and concentrates it more and more, and that's what hurt them.
Yeah.
That was the wind causing their problem.
Yeah, I think so, too.
So, anyway, but hopefully that'll dissipate. And coming out into the Gulf, you got to go anywhere from 12 to 20 miles, depending upon where you're leaving the shore, to get into good water again.
Right. 60 feet of water seems to be that rule.
Yeah, you can
60, 65.
You can get out in some areas less than that, but when the red tide is not present in an area, and the mangrove snapper bite this year is ungodly. I mean,
it
there is
like
so many
it
big
seems like
snapper.
It slowed down just for a little bit there, like about a month or two, but it also had probably something to do a lot with the weather, so we weren't getting much reports, but it's just like last year. I mean, last year was phenomenal for the mangs and the lanes. And it seems to still be continuing on.
Lane snapper, according to Dwayne, is the best year he's had on lane snapper.
Yeah, and yet last year he said the same thing, so...
Yeah,
you know,
two good years.
I mean, hearing some big lanes, you know, in the high teens.
And then the mangrove snapper's been in the 6 pound plus range.
Yeah.
Nice fish. I mean, for as far as mangrove snappers go.
Absolutely.
I love big mangrove snapper. I could fish for those all day.
I just don't want to eat them. I'm more of the 12 inch.
I don't mind eating them.
I like the smaller ones. Mangrove snapper to me are tastier when they're smaller, but a lot of people really love the bigger ones. But now we're getting into flavor again, and flavor it is, you know. But
I put enough stuff on them; it doesn't matter.
as coming back with the far as grouper goes, the only one of the passes that we're hearing about any kind of real grouper activity is Captiva.
Right.
Captiva's had some gag grouper.
Some bigger gag grouper, except we forgot one thing out there in the Gulf that we've
in
been hearing
past.
A little bit.
Okay.
Triple tail.
Oh, yeah, triple tail. It is the time for triple tail.
Even though the red tide's been out there, gotten a couple of sporadic reports of some nice triple tail. A few smaller ones and some studs.
Yeah, some really nice.
All over out
all
there.
Over?
No, I mean, yeah, it's actually true. For
offshore,
some reason or
not inside.
They're they're going under or around the red tide, and as soon as the red tide's out of the area, boy, they just, they're up on the buoys.
Maybe they're not as dumb as we thought.
Yeah, I mean,
prehistoric worldwide fish, so there's something about them that's been successful.
Yeah, they're
does red tide kill numbers. Coelacanth?
It's, yeah, I'm sure it does.
It's probably one of the coolest fish to fish for, because you have to be a hunter.
Yeah.
And you have to be patient, and you got a couple of choices. You can either come from downwind, going up into the wind at them with electric motor. If you don't have the electric motor, you got to get upwind from them and drift by them. And the object is to have as light a line so you can get the most distance out of your cast, because you're throwing a small shrimp, a small greenback, a small lure.
That's even with a trolling motor, I try to come from upwind just because of that. It's too much of a pain to cast that little shrimp into that wind. I want as much help from nature as I can get.
What I'll do is come in off from downwind and come up 60, 80 feet away from them,
right,
and get up until I can get kind of the wind at my back and cast towards them.
Yep.
But it's a lot of fun. It's an amazingly tricky fish to catch. My best recommendation is 6 to 8 pound monofilament rather than use a 20, 25 pound test fluorocarbon leader. The braided line is very visible to all fish, and for some reason or other, it you catch triple tail with it, but you will catch more without it. And then 6 to 8 pound mono, you need that for the distance. 20 to 25 pound fluorocarbon leader with mono, I'm only using a foot and a half, 2 foot. But with braid, I got to go a little bit more.
It's the one fish I didn't get enough of fishing this year. It's just too windy for me to be out there.
Too windy for everybody.
Well, and the other cool thing about triple tail, I mean, not only are they great eating and a good fight, but a lot of people are so surprised with how much they jump at times.
Yeah. And
you know, some people are just so
floored by that. It's not a constant action for them. Mm-mm. You'll get one that will porpoise, you know, it will just jump out of the water, you know, like a in and out, in and out, in and out, kind of in a rolling jump, and then you'll get other ones that will almost tail dance, and some that'll do backflips.
Yeah.
It's specific to each one of the fish. Some never come out of the water at all. Some will give a little head shake. But each one
is different.
Yeah.
Super crappie.
Yeah, super crappie.
They're just each one's different with how it's going to react to when you hook it. That's, I think, one of the neat things about them.
If you're listening to us in Indiana or Michigan or Wisconsin or Minnesota or New York, whatever, and if you've ever fished crappie, picture a 28-inch crappie. Picture crappie close to 30 inches long. That's what we're talking about. And doing it on 6 8-pound test. That's the cool part. So, anyway, coming back down around, anything else along the beaches we should talk about?
Seems like a little bit of fish at the mouths of the passes. You know, there's fish along the beaches as far as sheephead and whiting goes. But as you get closer to the mouths of the passes, it seems like they're a little bit more consistent. Along with an oddball mangrove, an oddball pompano, and an oddball flounder.
You know, have many oddball things.
It's not consistent.
Nothing this year has been consistent.
Yeah.
There's nothing consistent.
Yeah.
Just the inconsistency.
Yeah. The inconsistency is the only consistent thing that we have going this year. That's true. All right. Coming back down around Sanibel, Ponarasa, a lot of sheephead under the bridge, if and when they're not all dead from the red tide.
Right. Yeah, along with a few trout, too. That's been about the only two fish that I've heard of, really.
On the inside of the bottom of Sanibel, when you come across, there's kind of a deep channel. The boats go back and forth from Ponarasa going up towards Redfish there. They idle right along through there. But across from that, there's a flat. And it seems like as soon as that clears up, boy, those fish just pile up on those flat. I've heard a couple of things about that. I haven't heard much from the Coosahatchee. We are going to be delving much more into the Fort Myers area here by this fall. I guess
we're hopefully get a lot more reports.
Yeah, we have to. We're going to be expanding all of our where to go fishing places and all that to include the entire lower end of the harbor, Sanibel. And we're going to try and encompass the entire Fort Myers area. So we're going to be expanding our where to go fishing stuff to include Fort Myers here very soon. Because I guess we're going to include Fort Myers.
Just what you need into more work on the website.
Yeah.
That's exactly
another 500 pages.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
It's all good, though.
Yeah, so...
People love it, and it's helpful, so it's all good.
But Cape Coral, Fort Myers, all that, we are going to be adding all you to our stuff this year on the website. So we hadn't forgotten you, I just hadn't got there yet, but I guarantee by this time next year, we'll have 100 places for you to go and fish in Cape Coral, Fort Myers. So... Now, getting back up, Matt Lachey, a lot of sheephead under the bridge, some trout through the ICW, more up by the Indian Fields. On Ice House 2, we've heard of some redfish on those flats, not a lot of big ones again. What's been in good Jug Creek, Boquilla, Pine Island Sounder?
Well, all around Boquilla and Jug Creek, I've heard some really good reports on trout. And then there's been some sheep's head, especially over there around that little oyster bar right there by Jug Creek. Or the sandbar or whatever.
Yeah. I am going to try and quit smoking after the tent sale. My goal. Play guitar, not nicotine. That's going to be what I'm going to try and do.
Good luck with that.
So you're over there sniffling, and I can see my smoke is killing your eyes. So
There's also been a few pompano and an oddball flounder here and there, but the trout, I've had some just phenomenal reports of the trout over there in 2 feet to 6 feet of water. I mean, just scattered all over the place there.
You think people are going to forgive me when I take the month or two to get over my nicotine habits when I'm just growly and surly like a bear? Or should I just not go to the store?
Just take the month off.
What deserted island are we dropping you off on?
Yeah, I know.
It's either that or I'm going to figure out a way to get some tranquilizers, and you'll just be standing there running off on a tangent, and you'll suddenly go, ooh, what was that? And you'll be like, ooh.
Yeah.
We'll get you a blow gun.
I think we need a dart gun. Yes.
That's all you're going to hear, and you're going to, ooh, what was that? Done.
So,
B.A. Baracus, you.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's going to, when I stop imbibing nicotine, maybe I'll try a vapor for a while or something.
We'll get you. I got Bill Cosby's number in my phone.
Wow.
Man. Oh, goodness. Okay. A lot of trout and Pine Island Sound, 4 to 6 feet of water is what you're looking for. Boquilla actually doing pretty good, getting hit on and off by red tides. But the amount of fresh water coming out of the Coosahatchee, the Peace River, the Mayaca River is giving it somewhat of a layer of protection.
It's been our saving grace. I mean, we complain about it, but it's saving our butts at the same time.
Yeah, when you're looking at the harbor, Charlotte Harbor proper, let's give it a north-south thing. At the very top is the Mayaca River. Right off the top is the Peace River. So you have two major rivers coming in at the top of the harbor. At the very bottom of Charlotte Harbor, right where Sanibel comes out, is the mouth of the Coosahatchee River. And that's all the Lake Okeechobee dump. And I don't like hearing people complain about Lake Okeechobee. It's not the lake's fault. The lake is an amazing marvel. It's one of the treasures of Florida. I love Lake Okeechobee. And it's not the lake's fault. You got to go back. People tend to knee-jerk reaction to stuff. And several thousand people were killed in a hurricane back in the 19s or 20s. And when all these people died, they put a big dam dike around Lake Okeechobee and shut off the water flow going south. And what they need to do is put another canal in, another ditch, to divert more of this water into the Everglades where it belongs, where it's supposed to be. But it's not Lake Okeechobee that's the problem, boys and girls. It's the Army Corps of Engineers. Now, this is a group that, of course, we all have to learn as we go, but you would have thought sometime over the last 200 years they would have got at least a small clue. But let's, for some reason or other, the Army Corps Engineers stuffs their head between their cheeks and enjoys the warmth in there. They like the dark. I don't know what it is. It's not hard to fix. Put a ditch going south, drain the water south, put berms around all the existing canals in the Everglades. The canals are required in the Everglades because otherwise it floods and it causes problems. You don't build a bridge from Naples to Miami. That is the only government could come up with a solution like that. The idea is to hold some water in the Everglades and still let them drain. The canals work fine. There's nothing wrong with the whole canal system. It drains the Everglades perfectly, just like it was supposed to. But it does too good. So you get in there, you put a little berm all the way around the canals to hold 10, 12 inches of water behind it. It gets up that high, flows into the canal, and goes away, just like it's supposed to. It cost one one-hundredth to do that, to dig a canal south from Okeechobee and to put berms around the existing canals. This fixes everything, and it's 1/100th the cost of what these idiots in our government are trying to push. I've never seen people so brain dead. It drains. It works. Fill it in and start over? What are you, morons? Put a little dike around the outside. Stick a seawall around it, for God's sakes. It'd still be less money. Dirt and grass will work just fine. All we need to do is keep some water behind it and let the water drain off if it's too much. I'm sorry. I own a bait shop and I can figure this out. Why are these people even getting a paycheck? This is just not right. So anyway, Okeechobee
is... You don't have lobbyists paying you off.
That's it. I'm not getting paid to have an intelligent opinion.
Yeah, exactly.
So... Anyway,
you're not getting paid to accept somebody else's intelligent opinion.
That's what it is. That's the key phrase, yes. So, anyway, the runoff from Lake Okeechobee's got to go somewhere. And the Army Corps screwed it up. And given at the time, I understand why they did it. You know, putting that up there, it has probably, over the years, saved a lot of lives, saved a lot of property. It was the right thing to do at the time. But 100 years later, we have learned that it's not the right thing to do. Let's rerun the drainage, put it back where it belongs, bring the Everglades back to life, put some berms around the existing canal so it holds some water and doesn't completely drain off, and let's fix this with a reasonable amount of money and a lot of common sense.
Something's going to have to happen because... Now everybody on both sides, whether it be Port St. Lucie or Fort Myers,
People forget it jumps out the other side of the lake too. It goes out both sides.
Yeah, everybody's tired of it.
Everybody's tired of this, and I'm sorry, guys. How long does it take to dig a canal? I mean, we've got some big backhoes. I mean, turn me loose with one. I can dig you a ditch. It ain't that tough.
No. It isn't that hard.
So, anyway, all that water coming out of Lake Okeechobee down the Caloosahatchee is all at the southern end of the harbor. But we don't get much of that up here at the north end. But
Our natural current offshore runs south down our coast.
And so most of it gets pulled south. But the reason I was talking about Peace River, Mayak River, Caloosahatchee is every time the tide goes out, when you get red tide in Pine Island Sound, when you get it in... Jug Creek, Matt Lachey, anywhere down through there, the freshwater kills it as soon as that tide goes out. There's no salt left.
Right.
I mean, except for maybe a few inches on the bottom.
Right.
And so we have a self-killing, we have a red tide killing machine.
Yeah, we do.
It's like Kale sitting there with a big machine gun. Die! Die! So, anyway, I'm off my tangent. There's my rant for the year.
For the day.
No, I'm trying to hold off on the rants.
No, I know. You're doing a great job.
So, anyway, east side of the harbor. East side of the harbor. What are we talking about east side of the harbor?
Well, Burnt Store area, South Burnt Store, all the way up to, like, Hobbs Point. Sporadic, but good. Been some redfish scattered out there on the flats all the way up to the bushes, along with some trout. And then the pufferfish have been doing a really, really fine job for job security for us, selling a lot of soft plastics.
Yeah.
I understand the puffer fish have been just
everywhere.
Like the east side is like just puffer fish haven.
And I think the big thing is a lot of the grass on the east side has died off.
From the fresh water, by the way.
Right. It's a natural occurrence. Don't worry. It'll grow back before they start making no-wake zones there, too.
Give it time.
It hasn't had a lot of place for them to hold up, so any type of drop-off, any pothole... It's just loaded with them.
And now, boys and girls, yes, pufferfish chew up your baits and stuff, but they're still one of the coolest things on the planet.
Oh, they're awesome.
They're just amazing. But now they have one dangerous thing. Inside that cute little mouth with the big rubber lips on it is a beak like a parrot. And it will take a dice out of your finger in a skinny minute.
You've seen them make those nice little perfect half-circle bites out of your bait. They do the same thing to fingers.
So you can hold one in the palm of your hand, and you can hold it, and it's very safe. But if you put your finger in his mouth, he's going to keep a piece of that finger.
Yeah.
And you will remember it for many, many decades to come.
Oh, yeah.
So
it's worse than a snapper bite.
Yeah. Hold them. Play with them, you know, watch them blow up and go down and do all that kind of stuff because they're just the coolest thing to mess with. I mean, what a cruel joke of nature. You know, my whole thing on not getting eaten is to blow up big like a balloon. And
sometimes it works.
Yeah. So, but
it doesn't slow the cobia down, but other fish don't bother them.
So anyway, they're just the coolest fish to handle and play with, but keep your fingers out of their mouth. That is very dangerous. But just putting them in the palm of your hand, nah, they're not going to hurt you. There's nothing stinging or poisonous or anything. Flaying and eating one can kill you.
Right.
Yes, so bodily fluids are...
Unless you are a very, very well-trained chef who knows exactly how
Fugu?
To do this.
Fugu. Japanese chefs have Fugu. To go through 300 hours of training on how to fillet those and how to dress them out properly.
Otherwise, you can kill people.
And then on top of that, they have to...
Unless you're our old man, Vinny.
They have to take the waste.
Right.
any of the waste of the fish that they don't use can't just get thrown away in a dumpster. It has to go into a locked box. Because they've had a lot of problems with the homeless over there going through the dumpsters for fugu and eating it and dying.
Yeah, well, it's poison. So
yeah, imagine that.
Yeah. So anyway, wow, that's a weird thought. PGI and PGI canals, Alligator Creek first. What's going on in Alligator Creek?
Alligator Creek, as Alligator Creek usually goes, has been hit and miss. There have been some trout in there.
Some pretty close hit and misses with the boats that are in there.
Yeah, I came off the flats the other day. It looked like a marina in there. There was probably.
I heard it was like the mall parking lot at Christmas time.
It was. I've never seen so many boats inside Pirate Harbor or inside Alligator Creek.
That too.
Creek.
Pirate Harbor and Alligator Creek.
Pirate Harbor hasn't been that bad this year.
We're not trying to tell people don't go to Pirate Harbor, it's fished out. There's a few little trout in there, but you're going to run all that money way down there. You're going to go all the way up inside, and you're not really going to catch anything.
We get some decent trout and a lot of flounder I've been catching inside Pirate Harbor, which...
Okay, there you go, boys and girls. Everybody back to Pirate Harbor! Go ahead, there's flounder and there's trout. According to Captain Kale, fill up Pirate Harbor again.
But Alligator Creek, I went all the way up through them and back down and see a single person reeling a fish the whole time. That first section from the mouth up to the no wake zone. Yeah. If you're not finding anything there, try moving up to the marina. There's a little deep hole in front of the marina that a lot of times will pack up
right off the boat ramp, get trout and a lot of mangrove snappers right off that boat ramp. Let's go out to Robert. What's going on at the reef, the Alligator Creek Reef?
The reef, there's been some good spade fish. Which is interesting.
I like spade fish. I really do. I enjoy catching those, and I do the same thing as I do sand bream. Crappie jig, tiptoe to piece of shrimp.
Yeah, they can be a challenge.
And people don't realize how great eating they are, let alone the fight that they have. I mean, they love to turn that little round body sideways.
Yeah.
So it's just, I mean, you're literally pulling a
and when you get them right next to the boat,
pie plate sideways through the water.
You always know they're there because it's just a spinning circle. It's a little mini tornado in the water right
actually
there.
I got to watch an osprey fight one the other day.
Really?
Yeah, I've never seen a fish put up more of a fight to an osprey.
No, that would have been
funny. I didn't
think
he was going to get it out of the water.
Nice.
Yeah, they're amazing little fish, and they look like an angelfish.
A lot of people call them that.
And you're catching something that looks like an angelfish in the saltwater, it is a spade fish.
Good eating.
S-P-A-D-E fish.
Good eating. Pain to fillet, but
good
eating.
Pain to fillet, good eating. Kind of grayish meat, not as white and flaky, but still very tasty.
But it will turn white when you cook it.
Yeah, it's
kind of like the cabazon we used to catch in California. It's a member of the sculpin family, and you cut it open, and the meat is green. It looks putrid green.
Seriously?
Yeah. Cook it, turns this white and as flaky and as good as can be.
I'm just wondering, you know, there's a lot of things in life that bring this to mind, but okay, you catch a fish. How hungry did that person have to be when they filleted it
to try
and
it
saw
it
nasty green?
Because
meat.
That's what I'm used at that time. I was used to freshwater fish,
right?
Trout, perch, walleye, nice and white and clean and flaky. And then you see something green, and you're going to eat that? Mm. Oh, it's the best eating fish out here.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
As long as there's a Culver's open anywhere.
There, Mikey, you try it.
Walking distance. I'm not eating a green meat fish.
It was good.
I believe you, but
my God,
I'm just
it was
saying,
good.
You know, who like poke salad, P-O-L-K, poke salad. You have to boil it three times before it's not poisonous. Who boiled it up the first time? It's just a leaf, kind of a big leaf plant. But when you boil it the first time, it'll still make you, if you eat it raw, it'll make you very sick. If you eat it boiled once, make you a little bit sick. You boil it three times, and it's actually pretty good.
Here's a plate of poison sumac. Have at it.
Yeah, and, you know, but who said, well, that I boiled it once and it made me sick. Let me boil it again and try it. Well, it's still making me sick. If I boil it third time,
well,
maybe.
There's more people in this world like that than you realize. And you see that in the computer industry.
Okay.
When the printer doesn't work. And you go in and look at the queue, and they've tried to print that document 57 times because it didn't print on the 56th, but by God, it would work on the 57th. So there's all a lot more of them people running around than you think.
I stand corrected. All right. Now, PGI canals. I'm hearing jacks a little bit.
Jacks, juvenile tarpon, redfish, sheephead have been doing okay, some snook, some trout, deep holes.
Right,
find your deep holes.
Robert, what's going on at ponds?
Sheep's head, mangrove snapper, oddball black drum. You know, kind of the same thing at the mouths of all the canals. Seems like a little better concentration of the sheep's head and the mangrove snapper with an oddball black drum.
The snook are starting to pile in at ponds in the mouth.
Wow.
Not your big breeders. Your little
buck snook.
Yeah, yeah. Your little teenagers.
All right.
And then, like he was saying, you know, the tarpon have been really good in the backs of the canals throughout the whole area from the rim canal all the way back into the bird district, bird section, all the way back into, like, basically burnt store aisles.
The new one that's hot right now on the tarpon is the tiny storm swim shad.
Right.
The tiniest one.
Yeah.
A little 2-inch. Austin started playing with it, and it's becoming a phenomenon on the tarpon. And I mean, what more do you want? It's $3 for a pack of three.
Right.
Exactly. $1.10 a bait or something like that. And they actually catch tarpon. We're going to go into some of that. I'm going to do a show with Austin here pretty soon. He's got it down pat by how they roll, what they're going to do.
He does. He's
And he's just dialed that in even more than I had before.
It's refreshing good. To see out of somebody that young.
All right.
When I was that young, we went and caught fish. You didn't pay attention to why. You didn't pay attention to how. You didn't pay attention to where. You just went and caught fish.
Yep.
But he's actually looking and
learning,
pulling
and
it apart and learning, and it's refreshing to see.
All right. Here's the question before the panel. Last spot. Deep holes in the harbor.
I got nothing.
Okay, it's 1-0. Kale?
Catfish, for sure. Now,
is that because you've been out there and caught them, or just because you figured they're there?
Because I've been out there and caught them.
Okay.
This is the time of year where I start checking the deep holes. After I drop off my clients, float through, see what's there. I'm looking for the shark to show up.
Oh, it's way too cold for that. I mean, you're wasting your gas and your time.
Yeah, but this is still the time of year where I start to do it and just look. Usually,
but it's the right time of year. It's the wrong year.
Yes.
If this was 2013, 14, 15, I would agree with you.
I wouldn't argue with that a bit.
This year, you're a month early.
Absolutely.
Minimum.
I won't argue that fact. But this winter has been so inconsistent that I'm waiting for it to happen with bated breath.
Yeah, but I'm just, I'm going to call that's a waste of effort until you at least
see
the water in the high 60s.
Absolutely.
High 50s, low 60s, it's just not going to happen. But what could happen out there, and what, if I was you and I was looking at, is we just went real heavy on the Rapala depth-specific lures. Robert and I went through and we ordered a bunch of them. We're buying a lot of colors and a lot of depth specific stuff from 10 feet, 15, 20,
that's good.
30, because it seems like the Rapala's been the most consistent out of the package for running true, working the way they're supposed to, and catching fish.
Yeah, and a higher rate of speed you control them out without them blowing out.
14 knots.
Yeah, the Rapala definitely seems to be the one that you're going to pull in the harbor to find the grouper.
Yeah.
And
well, that won't be long either.
But that's what I'm saying. With this cooler water, if it wasn't for the red tide out there, I would bet you we'd have a great grouper population in the harbor right now. As far as a few blacks, very few, very, very few, but a lot of gags and a lot of small jewfish would be loaded up in those holes out there. But A, the wind, it's too windy. B, the red tide is keeping everything kind of locked. What's out has been staying out. What's in has been staying in.
That's right. Got me plus more a lot of fresh water. Anything.
Yeah, and the fresh water. So normally this water temperature should be very salty, very clear. We should have some great trolling out there in those holes. And we spent a lot of money getting prepped for this with all the different depth-specific Rapala stuff, because a lot of the other brands, they work good in that, but they don't track real well.
Right.
And we have that problem with the Manz. The Manz is a great lure, but boy, if it doesn't track well, it takes you got to really tune that eye up, and it's a lot of micro changes.
Now,
the Bomber's kind of between the two.
Yeah.
The Manz is the worst for inconsistent pulling, tracking straight. The Bomber has a much better track than the Manz, but not as good as the Rapala.
Right.
And for some reason or another, the Rapala's got a good size grouping on it. So we've been carrying...
They've got a very wide gamut versus all the other guys are...
It just really seems to be the one to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And even for the last 5 years, we've been doing all the different ones. And we're going to keep the Manz, and we're going to keep the Bomber. But we're going heavier into the Rapala this year, because it really seems like the one. If I'm going to look for grouper in the harbor or even in the Gulf, I'm going to be pulling more of the Rapala.
The only thing, I just don't like throwing those Rapalas at fish. They are some damn pretty lures coming out of the package. Well, the best coatings,
any of
your depth-specific Rapalas are just absolutely gorgeous.
Well, all Rapalas are depth-specific to a degree. One I love about Rapalas, you look on the top of the box, top right-hand corner in that box, when you're looking at it, it tells you what it's going to run. But the only one I can agree with you on that is the Balsa Wood Lures, the Balsa Extreme. I think they catch fish, they work great, they look great. And they have an action that only balsa wood can give you. I mean, only balsa wood does that. It's beautiful. And it works differently than any other lure on the planet, because it is a wood lure. Back your drag down a full turn, if not more.
Oh, yeah.
Because you pull too hard, you and that fish will rip that wood lure apart.
You don't want to stress that lure out.
Yeah, it will rip that lure apart. But you will hook more fish. You will, I mean, it will work. That Rapala, especially that Balsa Extreme, Rapala's planning on doing a special on those at tent sale, at my urging, too, because they are just one of the most amazing lures I've seen come out in a long time. A little on the pricey side, almost $10, but wow, what a bait.
Yeah, great. It seems really impressive. You're playing with that one in the tank, showing me it, and it's pretty slick looking.
Whether you're just slow retrieving it, moderate retrieve, fast retrieve, twitching it, I love that balsa action. There's nothing like balsa wood.
No.
But, you know, I grew up in that era when lures were made out of wood.
All of them.
Sure.
Every last one of them.
And I miss the action you could get out of a wood lure.
But Rapala kind of mastered that, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because they stuck with it for all these years. I mean, with the originals are still wood, aren't they?
Yeah, the original Rapalas are still wood, the bass lures and stuff.
Right.
But this is their kind of foray into the saltwater with them again. And
kind of a touch of a modern touch with the look and the feel.
Yeah, they've got
and
a real
action,
heavy outside epoxy coating,
mm-hmm.
and it's like an eighth of an inch thick to try and beef it up enough. It's not quite enough, but, man, any more and it wouldn't have the wood action. So.
Well, and that's what I've always loved about them, too. I mean, for, like, barracuda fishing, I've always loved, like, the old Rapalas, because you catch multiple barracuda on it and it still works.
Yeah.
Versus all of the other ones, they punch a couple holes in it and it's done.
Yeah, that's true. So, anyway, anything left to go over?
Some freshwater fishing's been pretty interesting out there.
All right, what's going on?
The crappie bite's been good, but sporadic. You know, one spot's got five fish, another spot's got one fish, but there's been some monster bluegill that the guys have been catching. I mean, I've had several guys come in with fish much bigger than their hands.
That's nice.
I mean,
bluegill.
Some nice bluegill. And they're getting them out there, like, off of the Yorkshire, Price Road area, mostly in the Northport canals. But I've had some pretty decent reports over there in Rotunda on them, too. So, and the guys are just moving around, hitting spot to spot, throwing, like, the little crappie jigs.
Bluegills have a special place in my heart, because when I was a kid, me and my golden retriever would go down to the creek and have the shotgun, you know, going to go duck hunting, and then I'd throw a line and I'd catch bluegills and, you know, get them out. Me and the dog would fry bluegills there on the campfire, and that's what we would eat, and Yeah, so yeah, right. I got a special thing for bluegill.
And I think with most people, it was their very first fish they ever caught. Most people.
You know? I don't know what mine would be, but it would probably have been a bluegill, some type of panfish like that. Yeah. Would definitely have been one of the first ones
I caught. My first memory of catching one was a bluegill. I mean, it might have been something else, but my very first memory is little on a, like a little Snoopy pole, and it was a bluegill at a gravel pit.
I'm guessing, Kale, it was a coelacanth.
Yeah.
Trout.
Trout was your first fish?
Yeah.
Nice.
We don't have a whole lot of bluegill up there.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know anything about fishing in Pennsylvania much. I know about it. I can help people with it, but I've never actually fished in Pennsylvania. Jersey a lot.
A lot of creek fishing for trout, for stock trout. I like fishing. While, some native trout, walleye, Erie, trout, Erie, smallmouth.
New Jersey is some of the, my most fun freshwater memories. I love fishing in New Jersey.
Yeah. It's,
but let's see. Anything else we can think of, boys and girls?
That's about it.
Okay.
It's supposed to be a beautiful week, so enjoy it.
Yeah.
Rain today and tomorrow, possibly. What day is today? Monday. Yeah, the day all the shrimp died. It's 6,000 dead shrimp this morning. So.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, welcome to Frank's life. So we got that, I think, under control. But the shiners are living again, so we got that one figured out. Outside of a bunch of dead bait for no dang reason at all, again, you know, it's only money. This is Fish and Frank here in the chair. It's Captain Kale in the guest seat. We got Robert in the chair across from me. And thank you guys for listening to Radio Fishing. It's nice to be back, and it's nice to be heard again. So we will see you guys. Say goodbye, Captain Kale.
Goodbye, Captain Kale.
Say goodbye, Robert.
Goodbye, Robert.
Okay.
Say goodbye, Frank.
See you guys.